You're listening to Campfire Conversations, brought to you by Three Rivers Land Trust. Connected to the land, committed to conservation. All right, folks, we are back for another episode. Today we are joined by North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission deer biologist. You want to go ahead and give yourself an introduction?
Yeah, my name is Mariah Bogus. Happy to be here. And as you said, deer biologist with the NCWRC.
Yeah, so you're relatively new to North Carolina. Is that correct?
Long-time North Carolinian, new to the commission.
Yeah, I guess I could have worded that better.
Yeah. I grew up here in Wilkes County. I've been with the commission in this role for a year now.
Yeah, so previously you come from Indiana as a deer biologist there. Is that correct?
Yeah. I spent almost a year there, about 11 months, working for Indiana DNR, essentially the same job with them. Like I said, I grew up in North Carolina. I went to NC State for wildlife science, and then I went to Mississippi State for my master's degree, and I essentially went straight from there to Indiana, and then kind of like a boomerang came back.
Mm-hmm.
So can't shake me now.
That's right. But it always feels good to be back in your home state, right?
Right, yeah.
Cool deal. So let's maybe hit on your master's research real quick, if you want to give a highlight of that and what it was about.
Yeah, so I would characterize my research as forest and deer ecology. That's like my very high-level way to describe it. Essentially, I was looking at how masting affects deer use of certain trees, or really the forest underneath certain oak trees, and then therefore what effects those deer had on the plant community and the survival of those acorns. That was like my main chapter, my thesis. And really, my big takeaway from that was I was using red oak acorns, Schumard oaks, which is really common, and well, I shouldn't say super common, but in the southern United States, you find it quite commonly in riparian areas and in river bottoms, and a real pretty tree. And but anyway, produces a large acorn, and I had these plots where essentially I put out acorns underneath these trees and some I didn't. And what I found was that deer, of course, use those trees that had acorns much more than the non-acorn trees. But really the interesting thing for me from a deer behavior standpoint was that they use those red oak acorns most in January and even into February,
okay,
even though they've been out there since November. So,
yeah, and I think that's a perception that a lot of deer hunters have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earlier in the years when the deer would be using those most frequently, but not the case.
Yeah, I think it has really cool implications from a hunting standpoint, and something I've applied personally. And I now, like, the thing I enjoy hunting the most is finding acorns, particularly red oaks, and hunting them December, you know, right at the end of season, can be some of the best hunting if you find the right tree.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a deer nut and a deer, you know, like a plant nerd kind of self-described. I really love looking for the masting trees. So it's fun to be a deer scientist when you're a deer hunter as well.
So no study on white oak acorns as well? You just focused on red oaks?
Yeah, and really the point wasn't to describe differences between white and red. It just so happened I use red. And the reason I use red, because I was able to get some white oak acorns that year, but white oak acorns germinate super fast.
Yep.
So I was picking these up and I had a huge walk-in cooler I kept them in, and white oak acorns would germinate overnight in a bag in there, and
makes it tough.
Yeah, you learn really quick how long a white oak acorn is viable to a deer, though, and it's not long. I think most people overestimate how long, or you know, how important that white oak crop can be underneath a single tree, because it can be gone in a flash when you get big rain. So
yeah. All right, so you left your master's and went to Indiana, now back in North Carolina. So what was the biggest change that you saw, or biggest hurdle, or one of the things that you were most happy about moving from Indiana, their DNR, to here to North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission?
Yeah, so there's a lot of differences, you know, between the states, between the hunting culture, between the agencies. One thing I really do like about working with the commission is that there's a really good network of very qualified people in the agency,
mm-hmm,
and all working together towards a common goal. I feel like I have a whole lot of support here for whatever I'm working on. And that's super valuable. And, you know, across the state, we have district biologists, we have regional supervisors, all very qualified. And we have a deer team that I'm a part of, along with several of those biologists, and we can all work together. They have a lot of the historical knowledge about management of deer in the state. And of course, having them, you know, on that deer team and being able to communicate with them all the time is super helpful. And I would definitely say that the biggest strength is just, you know, that teamwork that we have here.
Yeah, sure. So to kind of lay out where we're going to go today, I thought it would be great, one, for folks to get to know you a little bit, but as well as some of the regulations in North Carolina and the reasons behind that, as well as definitely hitting on CWD. We did a podcast back earlier in the year with Kip Adams, and he did a great job explaining that, what it was. But I think it'd be really good to have an in-depth look here in North Carolina and what we are doing as a state, mm-hmm. In regards to CWD. And then lastly, if we have time, hit on some stuff that you guys are doing, new studies in Durham, and all the things that go into that. So, but first, I think a great starting point is to discuss a little bit about that historical background of deer here in North Carolina and what that looked like potentially, and then move from there into how that changes regulations today, or how we're seeing that trend over time.
Yeah, so really, you know, take it back into the 1900s. Of course, we had several decades there. There's really some awesome records about deer restoration in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We had the Pisgah Game Preserve out west, and some other key properties that served as kind of source populations where deer were moved from to repopulate parts of the Piedmont and central parts of the state. And interestingly enough, like the Pisgah Game Preserve in western North Carolina served as a source population for a number of states all around us and across the South. And so it's really cool that North Carolina has that history of being involved in whitetail conservation all across the Southeast. But, you know, when we look across North Carolina today, you know, the bulk of the state, we have a very strong deer population all across the state. In the Piedmont, specifically our northwestern zones, our northwestern zone and our central zone, our deer zones, they're all, you know, kind of straddle the Piedmont. We have really strong deer populations there, and I would say it's kind of like the deer heaven of North Carolina. Like, it's just a really good mixture of open ground, whether that's agriculture, row crops, pastures, a mixture of that with permanent cover. And it's just a really good matrix that, of course, grows a lot of deer. And so mm-hmm. we see real high harvest numbers there annually, and a really steady harvest, and just all of our indices for deer populations are up, and we have a real robust population there. Of course, the eastern North Carolina has always been known as kind of the traditional deer hunting area. You know, back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, a lot of people would travel out east just to hunt deer. People from the Piedmont now, where we have lots of deer. And out in eastern North Carolina, of course, there's still that really rich deer hunting tradition. And that's where I live now. And having not grown up there, it's kind of cool living there for the last year out in Onslow County, just seeing how much deer hunting is a part of that culture.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's folks that, you know, are sitting in a stand or they're dog hunting, there's just everywhere you look, there's, you know, people are hunting around you, right? And then if we go out to western North Carolina, our western deer zone, I would characterize that pretty much all of those counties as a growing deer population for the most part. And if you look kind of over the years in our regulations, you'll see that there's been more and more opportunity for hunters out there, and that continues to be the case as regulations become less and less stringent in those counties, essentially just backing off on the doe harvest regulations and allowing more and more days for people to take does with guns. Those are controlled by our either sex days. And so when you look across North Carolina, you know, bulk of North Carolina, the population is pretty steady, but in those western counties, it's still growing, still kind of coming off of those restoration days where it's just been a slower increase in the population, but longer over time. And we still see that playing out.
Yeah, I think that's interesting and something that a lot of folks may not realize. I think a lot of folks take our deer herd now and the population numbers that we have for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say restoration phase, to folks nowadays, they might not even really understand what you're talking about because they've never seen it. So I think that's super interesting. And the fact, you know, now being in CWD days, we're talking about moving deer around, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like a, not a foreign concept, but just something that is a little bit different.
Yeah. The game has changed. I mean, we have records of the restoration occurring, and there's some really cool pictures of people, you know, they used to capture deer out in West North Carolina in wooden box traps. Mm-hmm. And they would bait them with apples, you know, and these deer were walking into these 3 foot by, you know, 5 feet long wooden boxes.
Shut the gate, boys.
And, yeah, and then they would have to tackle, you know, they didn't have any anesthesia or any way to sedate the deer to move it. And so, you know, they just keep it dark in there, move the deer, truck it hours across the state. Yeah. Of course, there wasn't interstates at the time. You know, they're trucking these deer across the state and turning them loose out in a big block of habitat. And so, yeah, I mean, the game has changed 100%. And now, you know, I feel fortunate having kind of growing up and getting into hunting in the last, you know, couple of decade or two. Really, for those of us who are younger, like this is the good old days of deer hunting. And,
right.
and this is normal to us. And we grew up with just this incredible resource all around us. I mean, it doesn't matter where you live in North Carolina. If you go out your door and there's forest there, there's deer.
Yeah.
And there's probably
and it's
a lot
so commonplace. You know, it's like deer are one of the most common animals that so many people know about just because all the work that's been done in the past to help restore them to that population. So, so let's move on and talk about a little bit, you know, I think there's always those folks out there that get heated, like with regulation change or, you know, just assume things are being changed willy nilly. But really there's so much data that goes into it, so much research, so much population monitoring, tracking and measuring of metrics. Do you want to hit on some of those and what you guys are doing to ensure that the bag limits are correct and to potentially change or not to potentially change, but to make sure the season dates are working and that they are most appropriate for our deer herd and the best deer herd that we can have?
Yeah. So I think to really tackle that question, we first have to discuss what we do annually to mm-hmm. add to our data set of deer all across the state. And I think most people probably, when they think of what the commission or any wildlife agency for that matter knows about deer, is that, you know, all we know is what people are reporting to us as far as harvest. But we get a lot more data than that though. So, of course, every time someone harvests a deer and they check it in, we get the, location of harvest, you know, weapon of harvest, date, and the sex of that deer. But then to add to that, every single year across the state, our biologists work to collect biological data from a number of sources. And generally that biological data is the age of the deer. So, you know, to put this in perspective, we'll collect this data at what we call a check station. It's essentially just our staff working outside of a meat processor, usually opening day of gun or black powder season. And as hunters bring deer in, you know, we'll talk to those hunters. We'll weigh the deer. We'll get the age of the deer from the jawbone. If it's a buck, we'll take antler measurements. If it's a doe, we'll check for lactation. So we get all these different metrics from those deer and just kind of add it to our database every single year. And what we're able to do with that is to look at long-term trends and all these different biological indices. And we're able to do that by, of course, county, by region, by deer biological management unit. And then, of course, now, you know, in recent years, that's combined more in with chronic wasting disease surveillance. Mm-hmm. So pretty much now, every time we handle a deer, we're also getting a CWD sample, or in some cases, we're only able to get CWD samples from those deer. But any given year, we usually handle a few thousand deer that we get this biological data from. And so that's one part of the puzzle, is that real data that comes from deer that we're able to tie back to harvest numbers across the state. We also do a hunter harvest survey every single year. We send that out to a random survey of hunters, a random sample across the state in spring. And that essentially asks folks questions like how many days did you hunt? How many hours? How many deer did you harvest? And we actually get more harvest information for other species as well.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm focusing in on just the deer here. And from that, we're able to make it an estimate of how many active hunters we had in the woods, which is really good to compare with your overall harvest, because if your harvest is decreasing over time, you might automatically assume your population is, but if your hunter numbers are decreasing as well, you know, the decline in harvest could be just because of that.
What are you seeing in that regard in terms of like folks man hours hunting, increasing, decreasing, staying the same year to year? Can you recall?
It's steady to slightly declining.
Really?
Statewide. And if you look at individual season zones, it's just slightly so ever declining. And that's kind of indicative of the overall national decline in hunters. But there's really not a super sharp decline that we're seeing in our data from the survey, which is encouraging compared to what I've seen from some other states.
Yeah.
So we're still seeing some pretty strong hunter numbers out there. Really cool statistics we're able to get from that are, on average, how many hunters are successful. You know, it's about 50% of hunters actually.
How many people do you think like tell the truth on those surveys?
I hope all of them.
I was just wondering, like, you know, somebody sitting down, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I shot a big one on this.
That's right.
when I was in Indiana, I saw some surveys come back where people would write a story out about their hunt.
Oh,
and
lovely.
I would enjoy reading this because it's actually, you know, it was really cool to hear from hunters, you know, the success they were having or whatnot. But yeah, in North Carolina, about 50% of hunters in a year will successfully harvest a deer. And of the successful hunters, if we just take them, on average, they shoot about 1.5 deer per person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and interestingly enough, I looked at that and kind of compared it to some other states, and it's actually very similar. In Indiana, I had looked at that number a lot, and it was right around 1.5, again, for successful hunters. So it's interesting that even with the cultural differences across states, a lot of the desire to how many deer they're going to shoot, how many they successfully shoot, and all that, it all plays out about even, pretty close. You know, it all comes out in the wash. So, anyway, that's our hunter harvest survey. Another survey that we do, and this is actually one that we're constantly looking for people to volunteer to collect data for us, is called our Deer Hunter Observation Survey. And through that, hunters, we essentially give them this kind of this page with a calendar on it. It's like a little logbook, and they record how many deer, turkey, whatnot they see every given hunt that they go on and how many hours they sat.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, we're able to get really cool statistics like number of hours per deer observed.
Yeah.
And that one's really telling because, you know, I discussed how we have harvest data and hunter number data. But then we also have, well, how many deer are people seeing? You know, if harvest is going down, is it because there's fewer deer, or is it they're choosing not to shoot them? So that's kind of a broad overview of where we're getting a lot of this data from. And there's options in there, you know, for people to assist with us through the Deer Hunter Observation Survey.
So how would they get hooked up with you guys if they wanted to get one of the logbooks? Volunteer wise,
Just go to our webpage. Essentially, like, if you Google NCWRC whitetail deer, on our whitetail deer landing page, there's a link there that has all the different like voluntary surveys that you can do. So there's the observation survey. Another one that's fun and hunters get something back from is our deer jawbone submission survey, and that's something I actually did for years. Growing up, I enjoyed, you know, as a kid and a student, was sending in my jawbones. And what we do with that data is we take those jawbones, and several biologists will all get together in spring, and we'll age them all together, and we'll kind of cross reference so that we agree on the ages. And then that also feeds into this database that we have ongoing. So when I look at age structure for a county, a region, state, or whatnot, I can draw from different data sources, and I can choose what kind of where that data comes from, to, you know, get a snapshot of what the age structure is for doe harvest or buck harvest or whatnot. So, there's data coming in from all different sides. And when it comes to making a recommendation for a regulation change, it's generally based on trends in all of those data. So just to break that down a little bit more, what those trends might look like. So with harvest, we a lot of times we'll look at antlered buck harvest over a square mile. Kind of, so you have an area reference, how many deer are getting taken out of that county per square mile. And that gives you an idea, of course, of harvest, but you also want to cross-reference that with how many hunters are in the woods. What does your hunter trends look like? What are your deer hunter observation trends looking like over time? I also cross-reference that with age structure of the population that's being harvested. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like for instance, in the doe harvest, if we see an exceptionally high percentage of yearling does in the harvest, which I would say is really anything over 35%, 30 to 35% is getting pretty high. When I've looked at data from other states and counties and whatnot, when you start to see population decline is usually when that number gets kind of above 35%, which just means you have you're having a lot of turnover in that population. Yeah. But anyway, that's another thing that we can kind of look at is those trends in age structure over time. Generally, an older age structure in especially the doe segment of the population is a pretty good indicator that you could be taking more deer out of there. So anyway, that's kind of a snapshot. We take all of those and we look at them together, and we use that along with feedback that our district biologists are getting back from hunters and even non-hunters from those counties. And that actually plays a really key component in developing a regulation is what are people on the ground seeing out there? Because if I live in Onslow County,
yeah,
I want feedback from people who live in Polk County. They're telling me what have they seen in the last 5 to 10 years there.
Because in reality, they may know a lot better than you because they're out there in the woods every single day. Or not, maybe not every single day, but, you know, more frequent than you are. And have that really good information in regards to what's going on.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I'm looking at it hopefully as objectively as possible looking at the data, but I don't have that subjective, I don't have that evidence in front of me from what I've seen with my own eyes. So that's where... of course, public feedback, our local staff feedback, all comes into that.
Mm-hmm. So those are the metrics that you guys as a commission use to make these decisions. So what are you seeing in regards to age and sex ratio that is currently transitioning, or you know, what kind of trends are you seeing now in regards to both of those that might be different than years past, maybe 10 years ago, whatever?
So statewide, I'll take a stab at statewide. If I look at, let's just say yearling bucks in the buck harvest. It's been trending downward for decades now.
See, that's interesting. Like even here in our office amongst our staff, that's a philosophy that some of us feel very, very different about. So it's interesting to hear the trends.
Yeah. And you know, and it's not like, it's not overnight, you know, it's not dropping by percentage points, you know, every year, but it's a long-term downward trend. As long as we have reliable age structure data from across the state, that it is a downward trend. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's something that at some point you would expect will bottom out and it'll level out at some point in time, but you know, looking at our data right now, it doesn't look like we're to that point yet. So a couple takeaways from that, it could be expanding population, growing population, which definitely the case in some of our western counties. It could also be that hunters are being more selective, and in a lot of cases that is probably what's happening. But you know, more deer out there, we have a lot of deer. Of course, now some of our central counties compared to 20 or 30 years ago, there's more deer for people to select from. You know, we have nice, you know, several months of hunting season, a full month and a half of gun season. Hunters have ample opportunity to select the deer they want to harvest. And so, you know, there's been incremental changes over time that have probably provided folks that luxury of waiting on the deer they want to mm-hmm. take, and that could be part of it. And so yeah, that's one trend overall that, you know, I would say is pretty consistent statewide.
Yeah, I will say I'm a fan of North Carolina's regulations. Like when you take into comparison how straightforward a lot of our, you know, sex that you can take is in comparison to some of the other states, it's pretty straightforward, which is very, and I think you mentioned this earlier about Indiana, like when you first get there, it's like, oh my gosh, all these regulations are so confusing in regards to what you can take, what you can't take, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, that's right. Every state seems to kind of tackle it differently. And, you know, and so much so that bag limits vary by different regions, and is so straightforward in North Carolina now. You know, it's 6 deer, 2 of which are antlered all across the state.
Yep.
And it can't get any more simple than that. And in the way that we manage our doe harvest, you know, in those western counties where we're still trying to be more conservative, we don't want to over harvest those populations, we're limiting the number of gun hunting days when does can be taken. Now, during bow season, people can still take a doe. Yeah. So there's still that opportunity, You know, in a lot of them, they might have one day they can shoot them with a gun, and they always have at least one day they can shoot them with a black powder weapon. So there's always, you know, trying to maintain that opportunity, but, you know, keeping those regulations consistent over time. And that compared to, you know, we'll use Indiana again for comparison. There was these different bag limits for different counties, and that was a different kind of deer because it was a bonus deer, and it just became, you know, very confusing. And a lot of people there realized that. But then again, local hunters had adapted to it, and they've understood that because they grew up kind of with that system. So it is so interesting how across states, the mechanisms that agencies use to adjust harvest can vary so widely. And a lot of the time, the hunters, you know, local hunters, they're so used to it that that's just the way, you know, it's believed that that's the only way to do it, right?
But
I do really like North Carolina's system. It's very simple, and it's pretty easy to convey that, you know, that regulation to people, which is important.
Yeah. So,
hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from the show to talk about one of our sponsors, Backcountry and Beyond. You can visit Backcountry and Beyond at 322 South Main Street in Salisbury, North Carolina. They've got a lot of awesome things right now. They've got a new restock of the Meat Church seasonings. They've got their Traeger grills that everybody knows and loves. And if you get your grill from Backcountry and Beyond, they have a free setup, assembly, and delivery to Salisbury, North Carolina, and the surrounding areas. So you can get hooked up with a nice grill, and you can get those seasonings while you're there, too. Also, they've got that new Nordic collection from Yeti. It's highly sought after, and they've got it in stock. So be sure to pop on down there and get all of your outdoor needs. Or if you can't make it down to Salisbury, you can shop online at www.backcountryandbeyond.com. The team at Montgomery Community College in Troy invite you to get to know their Forestry Management Technology Program. For decades, MCC has been helping forestry students explore this exciting, high-demand career option. MCC is located on the edge of the Uwari National Forest in the Uwari Mountains. The campus is situated on approximately 150 acres of timberland that is managed by the college's forestry program. Forestry is considered one of MCC's specialty programs, with other options including gunsmithing, hunting and shooting sports management, taxidermy, and pottery. Visit montgomery.edu to see course descriptions and explore the exciting world of forestry for yourself.
Before we move on, wait, no, I know another good topic. So, almost forgot. I think I even asked you this before we got started. So, in regards to all the data that you guys collect, you're getting age and sex. What are those portions of the state and or like honey hole, game lands, whatever, if somebody's looking for somewhere to hunt that might have a higher proportion of mature bucks on them?
So I don't have game land information because...
Or just like area, like, you know, area of the state.
Yeah. So I'll say eastern, and I'm going to be pretty vague there because the data that we collect, I can only boil it down to a certain level and have confidence in that trend. But over time, you know, if we go back 10 years and look at what the age structure of harvest was, the eastern zones, so the northeastern and southeastern zone, have consistently had a higher age class of harvest over time. Now, but one thing I will point out is that now in the last 5 years or so, like the central zone is definitely catching up.
Yeah.
Same with the western zone, kind of, you know, hot on its heels as well. And so when I look at those trends, like in the eastern, the northeastern and southeastern zones, there hasn't been a lot of change in age structure there, but it's that central and western. So when I talk about the, like that yearling harvest statewide trending downward in bucks, that's being driven really by the central zones and in the western zones. So, you know, over time there's more and more older age class deer in those areas.
Yeah. So what are you considering older? Like what would you consider the average age of a buck that's being taken in North Carolina?
Well, so when I'm saying older, I'm just considering anything 2.5 or older as adult. So without having the data in front of me, I believe our highest harvest age class is 2.5 for bucks.
Okay.
Yeah, which is just a little bit above 1.5, and then of course from there it starts going down with every age class.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other regulation that you think would be very, very beneficial to consider going for that, like, you know, isn't changed right now, or something that you think would increase our deer population, not numbers, but the herd health, et cetera. You know what I mean? Like, if you could snap your fingers without making anybody mad or anything like that, what would you change?
What would I change? Hmm.
Or and you can say, you know, nothing. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's totally fine too.
I think right now, really just focused on those Western counties and making sure that we're conservative with them and providing the opportunity that we have. And, and honestly, in saying that I want that change, really it's happening. And over the last 10, 15 years, as the commission has been changing those seasons to be a little bit more and more liberal, so there's more days to harvest, you know, even in this last year, looking at those trends and kind of evaluating what we, you know, would like to propose doing or not doing, the mindset is, okay, when we're 100% confident that that population has expanded to a point where it can support this many more days of doe harvest, we'll propose that. But until then, we want to be kind of on the conservative side, because we can always harvest more deer. But once you go and you harvest too many in those counties, then it's really hard backstepping to that point. And so, again, I think that's being done right, you know, and, but that's something that in the long term moving forward, we need to be
cognizant to work on.
And you know, all across the central zone, we're at a maximum season. Central, northwestern zone, and the eastern zones, we're at a maximum either sex season. There's plenty of opportunity for people. And, you know, and that's great. And honestly, there's plenty of room for people to harvest deer. And there's really, I would say, very little limitations on hunters to harvest what they need to fill their freezer and what they want to take.
Yeah, I would totally agree. So let's shift gears a little bit now. I know you moved back to be a deer biologist for North Carolina, and you're automatically, you get CWD thrown on your plate, all the good stuff that goes along with that. So if you want to kind of unpackage that and tell the story of, hey, yes, we as North Carolina have our first confirmed case, now more, but how all that first panned out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So see, in the fall of 2020, Virginia detected a CWD positive deer in Southwest Virginia, Montgomery County. It was just over 30 miles from the Surrey Stokes County line right there. So a little over 30 miles from North Carolina. But really, that just kind of tripped the breaker for us last year, last hunting season in 2021, to test more and more deer than we've ever tested for CWD, with a special emphasis on four counties in the northwestern zone there, right on the border, closer to that CWD positive in Virginia. And so in the 2021 season, we tested over 7,000 deer across the state, which is about 4% of the reported harvest.
Yeah.
A lot of deer. And kind of put that in perspective, that was our biggest surveillance year ever. The commission has been testing deer for CWD since 1999, really doing statewide surveillance since 2002. And we've tested well over 20,000 deer at this point. And in March, we got back results from a deer. It was a hunter harvested deer from Yakin County, northern Yakin County, actually. And so we got
just a voluntary submission.
Voluntary submission actually came through our, what we call our Cervid Health Cooperator Program. So taxidermists and processors that work with us to pull samples from deer that come to their businesses. And yeah, this deer had tested positive for CWD. It was confirmed as a CWD positive deer. And suddenly North Carolina were a CWD positive state from that deer in northern Yakin.
Mm-hmm. And now we now have number two. Correct?
That's right. Yeah. So earlier this summer, a deer that was tested as part of a crop depredation permit came back as CWD positive.
Yeah.
So we have two confirmed deer. They were both taken very close to one another up in northern Yakin County. And so, you know, that's, I guess, a good thing if there is a bright spot in
right.
that. They weren't super far apart.
Yeah. So both males, young males, is that correct as well?
First one was a young male, probably a 2.5-year-old deer, and the second one was a female.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, and then a lot of that has changed what you guys with the commission are doing in terms of management-wise, some changes to regulations. So let's kind of move into that a little bit about, well, first, you know, first off, you guys are holding a lot of public hearings. Y'all held several earlier in the year, just to kind of catch everybody up to speed on what CWD is, because there's a lot of folks that didn't even know. But y'all are also doing that more going forward, some public hearings in different areas to get the information out there. If you want to talk about that and what you guys are doing in that regard.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, we had the public meeting in Yakinville. I believe that was in May. We have another one September 22nd, September 29th, and then I think it's October 4th. All that information is up on our website, location information and times and whatnot. Really, we want to have those forums so that people can come get information, they can talk to us, they can ask questions, and we can have some kind of face-to-face, you know, conversations about the disease and what we can all do to, you know, at least help from not spreading this disease elsewhere. And so going into this year, one of our big messages is one, don't give it a ride.
That's right.
You know, that's one major thing that we can all do, whether hunters or non-hunters, really, to combat CWD. You know, over the last several decades, we've seen it jump across the U.S. into different parts of the country, and due in part mostly to human movement of CWD prions. That, you know, what causes CWD is CWD prions. And so that can be either through live deer. You know, we have prohibited fawn rehabilitation in those counties for the purpose of, we don't want there to be any reason for a fawn to get moved, even if it's for what seems like a really great purpose of rehabilitating it and possibly taking that disease with it. The other side is movement of dead deer that can spread the disease, which is why we have carcass transportation restrictions for hunter harvested deer, or actually any deer. But so if, you know, if a hunter takes a deer and it looks healthy, but it has CWD, and they take it elsewhere and they process it, and that carcass ends up on the landscape, that can introduce the disease. So, you know, one big message we really want to stress to people is, don't give this disease a ride. We know it's in northern Yakin County. We don't want to move it elsewhere. So we have this surveillance area. It's basically an 8-county area surrounding Yakin County, where there's all those regulations apply. So, you know, carcass parts can't be moved out of those counties.
So essentially, if you're hunting in Davie County or Yakin County, and you actually live somewhere else, Randolph County, you can't take that deer back, its whole body back, to your house to do anything with it. It has to be totally deboned, et cetera, before you can take it out of those surveillance areas.
Right. Yeah. So if I'll just name the counties off here, if I can't off the top of my head. It's Allegheny County, Davie County, Surrey, Stokes, Yakin, Wilkes, Iredell. I forgot one right there.
Uh-oh.
Did I say Yakin?
I think so. I don't know.
So if you're in one of those counties, there are special regulations that apply. And so that's carcass movement restrictions, fawn rehabilitation, prohibition. There's a ban on feeding deer outside of hunting season. So when this podcast goes live, it is legal to feed deer inside of surveillance areas. But again, starting on January 2nd, it won't be legal. There's also restrictions on what can and can't be used as far as deer excretions, basically lures, mm-hmm. attractants, and the sort. So the other thing that is a really key and important part of this is mandatory testing inside of those surveillance areas during black powder season, whether you're in that larger area or the smaller, what we call primary surveillance area, which is northern Yakin and southern Surrey County. During black powder season, every deer that's harvested needs to be brought to us or one of our locations for testing. And during all or part, depending on where you're at, again, of gun season, those deer need to be submitted. And so that's, you know, a way to ensure that we get a lot of deer for testing. And really the reason being is we need to test as much as we can this coming year as a commission to nail down exactly where this disease is. You know, see how far outward it is spread and at what prevalence, what percentage of the population is infected. I think the county I forgot was Wilkes County, which,
okay.
You know, that's the county I'm from, so I'm sorry. But yeah, so those 8 counties right there.
Yeah, so let's like take a hunter. You know, I feel like hunters, especially in that area or even anywhere, they're getting blasted with a lot of information. You know, it's a lot to take in. So let's say somebody like yourself from Onslow County wants to go back to their home county, Wilkes County, an area in the primary or secondary surveillance area and hunt game lands. Mm-hmm. They harvest a deer. Walk them through the best case scenario of the best thing that they can do. One, not only to be legal, but some of those best management practices to really help contain CWD and prevent the spread mm-hmm. going forward.
Yeah, so I'll answer that specific to those game lands, but I'll also just throw in an option for private lands as well. So really the main regulation that folks really need to be aware of, especially if they're coming from out of that surveillance area, is the carcass transport yep. restriction. As you mentioned, essentially deboned meat. You know, if you shoot a buck, you want to get mounted. If you have a clean skull cap, no brain matter or meat attached, and a caped hide, again, with no spine in it, you know, you can't have the tail in the end or anything like that, that can be taken out. Mm-hmm. So let's say someone goes to a game land inside the surveillance area and they take a deer. They would have to debone that deer before they take it home. You know, options would be to leave that carcass in place at the site of harvest and take just the meat. The other one would be to take those carcass parts, you know, back to the truck, debone the meat, and then dispose of those, the meat and bones and viscera and everything, take it to a transfer station or some location like that inside the surveillance area that can take that, take it to a line landfill. The other option, and this is for folks on private land, would be that you could dig a hole. Again, on private property, the best thing to do really is to dig a hole and just put it in the hole right there mm-hmm. on the property where you harvest it. Mm-hmm. If it stays on the surface wherever you are, you know, if you shoot a deer and you just leave the carcass on the surface, the important thing there is to make sure that carcass stays where it was harvested. So what I mean by that is don't haul it miles down the road, clean it, and then dump the carcass out. Just leave it on the property where you took it, and at least at that point you're not moving the disease around if that deer was infected.
Yeah, for sure. But mandatory testing will come into effect as well, and you want to give folks the rundown of how they can figure out, one, are they required to test, or two, the best way for them to do that that's maybe not so cumbersome for them.
Right. Yeah. So all the information, first off, if you want to read it and look at it in person, is on our CWD website.
Which is something every single hunter should do yep. just to make sure you're in the know. I mean, if you're hunting, you obviously care about deer in the population. So just take the time to go through there and read a little bit to figure out what's most applicable to you on the land that you hunt or will be hunting. So that way, before you actually harvest a deer, you're prepared. You have a game plan. You know what you're going to do once you harvest an animal, and you're not fumbling around to try to figure something out.
Right. 100%. Yeah. And it's easy to find. It's ncwildlife.org/CWD. Mm-hmm. Or you can Google NCWRC CWD.
Yeah. So what's some of the most frequent questions you're getting right now from hunters that maybe we've not talked about in regards to CWD?
You know, top of mind, where can I get my deer tested? You go to that page, there's a button right at the top that says get my deer tested. Essentially, if you click on that page, it'll lay out on a map where you can go. There's three major options for getting a deer tested, and that is what we're calling our testing drop-off stations. They're essentially a freezer set up at a public location. A lot of times it's a gas station, fire station, something like that, out on the sidewalk. You essentially just put your deer head in there in a bag mm-hmm. with a data sheet attached to it. Other option we have in our staff check stations that we'll have running in certain locations inside the surveillance area. And that information will be up on the website soon as far as the schedule for those. And essentially you can just go there and get your deer tested by one of us. They're not, you know, there's definitely several options of where to get a deer tested. That's just one of them. The third one is you can go to a processor or taxidermist that also tests deer for us. Those are our Servant Health cooperators. So if you are already going to take it to a processor, you can take it to one of those and they'll pull a sample while they're processing your deer, or the same with taxidermists. So that's one big question we've been getting a lot. And one that, you know, I think we'll all have a steep learning curve in front of us for this yeah. year, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, and we all have to get through it together. Something else, you know, there's not necessarily a quick turnaround on test results. So advice you're giving hunters on, you know, I think at least in the Yakin County meeting, that's one of the first things. Well, can I eat my deer in the intermission between getting it tested and figuring out those results?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just to tee that up, I'll just touch on the medical guidance there from the medical community. So obviously I'm not a doctor. I will refer to the CDC, mm-hmm. World Health Organization, which both...
The best science that's currently available.
Exactly. Folks that listen to, not a wildlife biologist, but they will their guidance is to not consume a deer if it's known to be CWD positive, yep. essentially. For those counties that are now in the surveillance area, it would be best practice to have those deer tested before consuming them. For folks across the state, you know, outside that surveillance area, CWD hasn't been detected in those areas, so they really should be good to continue on as they have in the past until we do find the disease. So if you're in that surveillance area and you take a deer, you take it to a head drop location, a testing drop off, and we send in the sample for you, you do have several weeks to wait until you'll know whether or not that deer tested positive or not.
What's the average turnaround right now? 6 weeks?
It's going to be somewhere around, 4 to 6 weeks, mm-hmm. Something like that this coming year. Of course, we're going to be looking at a really different workload and a whole lot more sample volume coming through. So that's one thing to keep in mind with even the laboratory that's processing all of those. We'll have a lot more to process that we're sending them.
Right.
But while you're waiting on that test result, my suggestion, and this is, I will suggest it simply because this is what I do with all my deer, is I will just quarter that deer, and I'll put it in the freezer, and I'll freeze it those quarters whole. I do that because I process all of mine myself, and so I wait to process them till I get those test results back, and I can just thaw them and take care of them. So that would be one way to approach it. The other option would be, if you take it to a processor and they're already pulling the sample, they're going to go ahead and process that deer. They're going to give you your deer meat back and send the sample off to us. Before you consume that venison, you can just wait on it. And once that test results come back, that meat's good to go.
Yeah. So that right there is a pitch within itself to be cautious ahead of time to prevent the spread of CWD, because one, somebody like myself who also processes their own meat, last thing I want to do is spend a lot of time and effort processing something that I'm not going to be able to eat. Or two, folks that are taking it to a processor, last thing you want to do is pay for it and not be able to eat it if that's, the process that you're wanting to do. So definitely a great pitch to, do your due diligence ahead of time and ensure that we, as citizens of North Carolina, are doing the best that we can to not help spread the disease, for sure.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just throw this in there for anyone who gets their deer tested. If your deer tests positive, we will reach out to you directly. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a way online you can, there's a button on our CWD website to look at your test results, and it'll show you, if your deer, if it wasn't detected, it'll say not detected. If that comes back positive, of course, it'll be posted positive there, but we will also call you directly and alert you.
So it's not something a hunter has to refresh right, every 30 right. minutes, because you will find out for sure.
Rest assured. Yeah. We'll reach out to you. And for those folks, the option is still yours, right? I shared the guidance of what the medical experts say. But at the end of the day, it's still your deer. And if you choose to consume that deer, we're not going to stop you, right?
For sure.
But if you do want to dispose of that meat and not consume it, just reach out to us and we can take care of that and help you dispose of it safely so that it doesn't, go on to infect any other deer.
Yeah, so definitely, I guess, sad times in some regard that we're living in regards to we have it and we have to deal with it, but anything we can do to help make it worse will definitely be the betterment for all of us. So any other things in regards to CWD that you want to hit on for listeners?
I don't think so. You touched on just all hunters being aware, and I think that's what we should all do. This is, whether it's Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, or wherever, CWD is in white-tailed deer populations as a country, as a whole.
Yeah.
And, whether you travel to hunt or you hunt local, there are things you should be aware of and just be keeping tabs on so that you're a good deer conservationist.
And we, as North Carolina, we're late to the game. And I think this is a good game to be late to. So, the good thing about you and your position, you have so many other states to learn from along the way to help guide us in the best management decisions that we are making as a state to protect our deer herd. But moving on to a lighter topic, which I love to do, and I'm sure you do too, is you guys also, not only are you collecting all that data, you know, year after year after year, but as the commission, you're also trying to stay on top of new and emerging research, and always staying up to speed on our deer herd. But you guys are also just starting a study around Durham, is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Seems like kind of just about all the time there's some kind of a special project going on, you know, on the side. And we touched on the ongoing research, but then we'll you know, discover or kind of pinpoint a certain area where we need to learn more. And so that has led to this new project, the Durham Deer Ecology Project, essentially is what we're calling it. The idea behind it is that we want to learn more about deer ecology.
So first of all, I can tell a large difference in your face already just talking about this. You're like, I'm so burnt out on CWD and excited to be on the lighter topics. But anyways.
This is a fun one to learn about. Yeah, this is a really cool project. And we're doing it from essentially right on the northern edge of Durham proper, like the suburb where the suburbs and urban interface meet, where there's very few deer because it's so urbanized, all the way up into northern Durham County. It's the bulk of the project is actually a collar project. So we have a research team with NC State. They are capturing deer and putting collars on them, putting GPS collars on them, and tracking them. And from that, we're getting habitat use data. We're getting movement data. We're getting mortality data. We're also getting locations of fawns, which we're therefore or we're then going in and collaring, and we're getting movement and mortality data on them. And all of this is essentially just getting us all this deer ecology data for deer all the way from a very urban area, which we have more and more urbanization across North Carolina as our human population grows. We have those deer ecology stats in the urban area, suburban area, out to the more rural area, which the rural areas, which you know, I would say in the deer management world, we're a lot more used to kind of dealing with deer in rural areas where we have hunting as an option. This project is getting us all this data, and we're going to be able to look at it across that gradient and understand more about what our tools are for managing deer, what reproduction looks like, what those mortality sources look like and so on.
So how long is this, like, is it up and running now or like still in the planning phases, or what's the status of the project right now?
It is up and running. We started capturing deer in January of this year, 2022. Adult capture season is essentially January through April.
Yep.
Fawns, we're of course capturing in May and June. And so right now we're just monitoring those deer and gearing up for another capture season starting in January, and the team will be out there capturing deer again.
And what's the sample size for that? Do you know, like, how would the number that we are going to try to collar altogether?
Yeah, about 30 bucks and 35 does every year.
Okay.
Yeah, for 4 years. So we're going to have a lot of deer out there captured, and you know, over that time span, of course, their collars drop off. You know, of the bucks every winter, those collars will automatically fall off, and we'll have to, you know, I shouldn't say we, the our researchers, we'll go out there and capture more deer. Yeah. They're really good at capturing deer and doing it safely, both for them and for the deer. Of course they're working in, you know, in neighborhoods and in folks' yards a lot of times. And I've been out and assisting with the project and just from the commission side, helping with it, and they've been very successful this first year. I think there's, you know, somewhere around 60 some deer captured or collared at this moment out there.
Yeah, so I know it's super early, but any preliminary, like, things that, I don't know if you've even had access to the data yet, but any interesting things that have come about?
I wouldn't say there's, you know, we haven't looked at the data in that way any.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything that just stood out automatically, like, oh, I would have never guessed that.
Well, my first takeaway this year has been that we've had very low fawn mortality.
Really?
Yeah, our fawns are surviving actually very well and at a higher rate than most, you know, deer capture projects across the Southeast, actually at a much higher rate. So it'll be really interesting to see that play out in a full year. You know, we're right now like 4 months out from having kind of the first kind of loop of data. So we'll have a little bit better idea kind of what's going on with deer after fall. Of course, with the rut in November and any hunter harvest that occurs, there's a lot of room for deer to die of different sources. So, we're several months out from kind of getting that first real kind of window and, you know, peek at what's happening. But that's been one big takeaway, is that those deer are really good at surviving up there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always interesting too. That's just a totally, like you said, a totally different area that we are not used to researching, or, you know, not fully aware of, but something that is changing every day with urbanization like it is. It becomes important to understand what's going on in those areas as well.
Right. Yeah. It's not a place that we normally think of when we think of deer management, but increasingly it's more and more important to North Carolina deer management.
For sure. So management implications from that, again, you know, you can't really put the cart before the horse if you don't have the survey results or data back to analyze it. But what are some things that you think might come out of it? Any ideas?
Well, you know, we'll have a better idea about what's happening with those populations, if they're growing, if they're steady, what's killing deer, you know, what's the driving source of mortality. I should mention two other aspects of the project is we're doing several human surveys in those areas on, you know, people's
deer
attitudes
in my
of
flower
deer.
Beds eating all my petunias.
Where there's deer, there's definitely some opinions on deer. And then we're also doing a genetic mark recapture project. We're essentially doing fecal studies. So we're doing surveys, pick up fecal pellets and genetically look at, you know, what deer it is, and come up with a number of how many there are. I hope from the management implications, we'll be able to understand a lot more how deer do use that landscape. And that might, you know, of course, lead to at least some takeaways for municipalities that have issues with deer or want to manage their population a certain way, that we can help them identify, you know, what parts of their town might be susceptible to some deer management efforts.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, I appreciate your time. Anything else that you want to add to throw in there to listeners that you think's important in regards to anything we talked about or anything else?
Well, I would just say that we live in an ever-changing world of deer management, and I think that we're all living through the heyday of deer, and that we're living on the results of decades of really managers and conservationists before us for the last 100 years that have gotten deer to the point they are now. And you know, we talked a lot about CWD, and I think that's the really big action call for all of us in this generation, the generations that are alive right now. That's where we can make a difference for the future, for our kids and our kids' kids, so that there are deer to hunt, to enjoy, to watch like we have now. And so I would just say, definitely don't take deer for granted. There's even though they're very plentiful, as we mentioned, there's a lot that we can still do to be better stewards of them. And I hope that everyone keeps up to date with CWD and does what they can, especially if they're in the surveillance areas.
Yeah, be the pioneer in your field, like the guys in Pisgah and their box traps, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Except a little different now, but, right. You know, get out there and do things correctly and get educated. And if you have questions, ask. There's so many resources out there. You shouldn't be left trying to figure out things on your own. Ask and still have fun doing it. And I think that's really the most important thing, is not to stop hunting because all these issues are on the forefront, you know. Hunters in North Carolina are our, you know, as wildlife biologists, our biggest tool. So we definitely don't want to lose those for anything.
For sure. And I think that's one thing just to touch on, is that this is by no means the end of deer hunting. It is, you know, this is not a doomsday. This is merely just, you know, we're stepping into kind of a new phase of the reality of what deer hunting looks like. You know, it's unfortunate that we have the disease, but it's not the end of deer hunting. You know, look, I grew up in Eastern Wilkes County, like very close to where all this is occurring. And, I hope to be able to go back there and hunt my entire life, to take my kids there. And, you know, I want that tradition to be alive. I think we all do. And we want to help, you know, as a community, hunters into this new stage of just thinking about one more thing, you know, when we go hunting, so that we're doing our part.
Yep. Cool deal. Well, we appreciate it and appreciate all you and the commission staff is doing for, you know, wildlife as a whole, not just deer, but everything. So
appreciate it.
Until next time. If you like the show and would like the episodes to keep coming, you should know that our podcast is just one of the tools that we use at Three Rivers Land Trust to further our conservation mission. Our number one priority and purpose is to conserve land and natural resources for future generations and to be a voice for wildlife and to ensure wildlife populations have habitat forever here in North Carolina. This podcast is just a byproduct to further that mission. You can visit our website at trlt.org to join us in this conservation mission.